This is Coda Radio, episode 25, for November 26, 2012. You're listening to Coda Radio, Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and business of software development and related technologies. My name is Chris, and joining us every single week is our host, Michael Dominic. Hey there, Michael.
Good morrow, gentles.
Good afternoon to you, sir. How you doing today?
I'm good. I have a broken phone, but that's pretty much standard.
Yeah, we were doing a little bemoaning on the pre-show on the live stream. It also looked like, if I was to follow your Twitter timeline, that you had quite a coding marathon last night.
I did. I also forgot to turn off my email client.
Well, so you see, these are all things that you just have to kind of get in the zone for after a late night of coding. So what are we talking about today?
Well, today we are finally, maybe, possibly talking about C++.
I believe
it's
it.
Renaissance.
Today I feel it. I believe it. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think it's going to happen today.
Especially since we cut out the longest portion of the show to make
right.
sure it happens. There
and,
is no hoopla this week.
And you have a meeting after the show, so we have to stay on topic and focus, so we're unlikely to veer off topic very much, because we know we have a deadline.
I'm not sure that assertion would pass, but okay. we can try.
That might be true. All right, well, before we get to that, should we start with the feedback?
Let's do it. Okay. So Victor, that is a nice, strong name, by the way.
Victor.
Right, but come on, guys. Where's the screaming? You two get along too well. Now, the rest of his email was just glowing praise, which is awesome.
We've had a few disagreements on the show.
And I've also gotten many an email telling me that I abuse you emotionally.
Oh, really?
Indeed.
Well, that's good. Somebody's got to.
I think you'll remember one in particular.
Would it be regarding the Nexus Q?
It could. It could indeed.
Which, I believe so far, I appear to have had a correct assessment, even according to Google, who have now killed the product. So I'm just like,
yeah, I'm actually annoyed I didn't get one because it just looks cool.
Okay, that's true. Although maybe you could pick it up on the used market. I don't know. But what would you do with it? Just a doorstop, I guess.
Probably play some T-ball.
Maybe put it on your shelf and have it glow at you for a while.
It looks like the thing from Portal.
Yes, it does.
Yes,
it does. It's very cool.
All right. So a listener who literally signed his name, a listener.
I like that.
Shares his blog, which is about development hardware. Fair enough.
I'd give
it a read. He's a brand spanking new blog, and he just talks about what he's currently running.
Well, that's cool. So as a developer, this is the hardware that I'm currently using. So it's vue-source-code.com.
It's interesting. I mean, I would say SSD or bust.
It's kind of good to maybe look at other folks' setup and kind of, you know, compare it to what you do and see,
yeah.
Are they doing something here that maybe I wish I was doing, or if I did it like this, it might be a little interesting. Like, I noticed he notes here that he runs Windows as a boot option for a dedicated .NET environment. He has Windows 8 on there, Visual Studio
right.
2012. I mean, that sounds pretty current. You know, he's
yeah,
got a lot of new stuff on there.
Yeah, actually, on the Windows side, me and him are actually surprisingly close. Just when you get to the Mac side, he doesn't have it. So that's fine.
Yeah.
But moving along, Sebastian asks, when building a custom app for a client, how do you limit the time they take to test each iteration? First off, I think this is an old question. Because it sounds familiar. But I'm going to answer it anyway, because the date was after last week's show, so it can't be old. This has never been a problem for me. Limiting client QA time, it just hasn't been an issue. Usually because, you know, they're the ones who need to ship. So I would ask, is it that they're just not opening the project? Are they not going to the site or the app or whatever? Or are they finding issues, either legitimate or otherwise, that doesn't make sense?
I would almost wonder if it's the first one. You know, like, oh, they sit on it, and then they finally get around, okay, yeah, it looks fine. Let's go with the next one.
Yes. Also, the feed died.
Oh, man.
Should we pause?
No, we're okay. We can keep going.
Okay. So
it's because you know what it is it's because the way it's distributed, it could be like in their country it went down, but like here in our country, it's still up. So some people are able to still watch.
Alan. All right, so this is, I mean, don't want to hit this too hard, but is it possible that there are legitimate issues in what you've shipped and that's why it's taking so long? Or is it really that they're just, you send it on a Monday and they don't look at it till Wednesday? I mean, that I don't know, because
And then why not just say, I mean, this just seems to me at the core of it like a commun and this sounds so cheesy to say out loud, like a communications issue.
well, it's got to be.
There's certain expectations that aren't being set clearly on both sides, and it's really not that hard of an approach. You just take the approach of, I want to save you money, I want to save you time, and I want to keep this project on track. So what I'd like to do is sort of set some windows of time that you guys are going to review this app, so that way we can keep development pace at a certain guaranteed rate, and we think that'll just save you some money. And that's not how you approach it. And I don't think they're going to argue with that.
Right, and I don't even have to do that though. So the way I do it is I break things down into sprints. Basically, if sprint one hasn't been accepted, I won't start sprint two. So it really puts the onus of, well, you have a ship date, which we can't promise, but we can try, which you should never do,
And I like that
promise.
too, because it's like these manageable chunks that each person involved can wrap their brain around. And it's also like, because there are these goalposts, if you don't accomplish the one, you it's easily to say, well, you're delaying this goal now. It's easily to define what you're causing delay to.
Right, and I found that it's a lot easier if you have external deliverables as well. So designers, server admins, back-end developers, everybody kind of has the same track. Also for billing, it's kind of great because you pay for sprint one, or they pay for sprint one. Sprint two doesn't start till it's paid for. That way, no one you can never get into a situation where someone owes you large sums of money.
Right, and then where you also feel very begrudged to work for them.
Yes. But Sebastian, I mean, like Chris is saying, it's kind of cheesy, but this is probably not a technical problem, right? In all fairness, unless you've shipped some really crap code.
Yeah, which I don't think that's probably true. That's
That's
probably not the
probably
case.
not true.
Yeah.
It's probably just, you might want to look into some project management tools as well that would probably help you out. I recently moved to Basecamp. I used it before, I left it, and now I'm back.
Really? Back, huh?
Well, it keeps everything centralized. So one of the best things is, you want a change order. That's great. If it's not in Basecamp, it doesn't exist. That way you have a record and everything is streamlined. You have to-dos and deliverable dates. It just keeps everybody on the same page. So there's no
Yeah, that's a really good
communication
idea.
issues. And because usually most problems in a project have nothing to do with the code.
Yeah, or and it's same when you're a sysadmin, it's always one person expects one thing and another person's working another set of expectations, or somebody didn't listen completely, or sometimes people can have a conversation and walk away with two different conclusions from that conversation. That happens and it baffles me all the time because I don't think I'm a particularly bad communicator, but
That happens a lot.
I'm often surprised. Like we'll walk away and then a few days later they'll ask, well, what about this? We covered that in that conversation very explicitly.
So one thing I've been doing is after a phone call, I will actually send an email summarizing the phone call as I understood it. That way you nip that right in the bud.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, all of these things we're talking about, Chris, add overhead to your day. Right? This is all PME type nonsense that unfortunately you kind of have to do if you're an indie.
And it's one of those things that you can't always, when you say, well, after we get off the phone, I sit down and I write them an email. There's some situations where you're not billing them for that phone call for whatever, even if it's because if it's just something quick or whatever it is, and then you're not billing them for that time to write that email up. So you have to remember a few weeks back somebody asked, how do I price myself? And these are some of the things that when you're pricing yourself for the hours you do charge for, you kind of have to factor into. So when you underprice yourself to be more competitive, you're actually costing yourself at these times because you want to build in some of that administrative overhead.
Yeah, because generally, if you're a freelance developer, I mean, big shops get away with charging for admin stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's
Little
pretty typical
shops,
with law.
yeah, little shops don't generally. Like I generally don't bill you for giving you an estimate. Unless you
Right.
send me like a 200-page PDF, then I do. But if you just email me a quick wireframe, I'll look at it, send you an estimate back. So that's something you always have to bill in that time. You always have to make it back or have it as part of your operating costs. or else you'll get into a lot of trouble.
And it's easier if, you know, if he has these kinds of things in Basecamp, or if he has these kind of things written down and they are all agreed upon and you know, set ahead of time, it's easier to then also, you know, bill for some of that stuff too. It's when it's more defined, it's easier to bill for.
So, I mean, Chris, didn't we talk on like episode 3? I generally work like 8 to 12 hours a day, but I bill about 6 to 8.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just, you know, a lot of admin, right? And there's also stuff you have to do if you give warranties. You generally don't bill for it because it's part of the warranty.
Mm-hmm. Or for, like, in my case, driving. You know, I don't, yeah, unless it's an emergency or something like that, I don't bill for drive time.
Or if I'm going to Manhattan, that's a 3-hour trip, you know, but it's an hour and a half each way. So there's going to be a lot of things where you know, say, what was this last week? Someone asked, how much should I charge for doing some kind of Rails development?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he emailed a number in that was like 25 an hour or 20 an hour.
Right.
And he was in North America. Mm-hmm. That's really, really low.
Yeah.
And that may be more than you're making at your salary. But what's going to happen is, A, you're paying a lot more taxes as an indie. A lot more.
It's
B, you're not getting paid for 40 hours a week no matter what.
Yeah.
Especially around this time of year, at least for me, I don't know if this stands for Chris, when folks start going with their families and, you know, sometimes projects kick off 2 weeks late and you will have a lot of time for those projects. Or recently, you know, natural disasters, Hurricane Sandy killed a month-long project for me.
Mm-hmm. You know what I find too is my business ebbs and flows in the holiday. It could be absolutely nothing. I won't hear anything. And then, oh my gosh, the CEO wants to spend X amount of dollars in the 2012 tax season, so we want to buy all of this hardware right now. Can you help us get all this figured out really fast, really quick? And it'll just all of a sudden be a big burst of work, and it's just absolutely crazy.
Oh, the week before Christmas, everybody's like, okay, so we want to ship an update to our app. The other reason is iTunes closes iTunes Connect Christmas week. So I have that as well, and then I'm dead until the second week in January. Unless I'm doing some kind of enterprise work.
The slog.
Yeah. So these are all things you guys should keep in mind. I know this is way off topic for Sebastian, but, you know, from personal experience, I've had a project go bad because I didn't have, very long time ago, that type of project management overhead.
I have a client that I don't have any issues now, but just my experience tells me that it's beginning to slip in the wrong direction because expectations aren't being stated clearly. And this is a challenge for me specifically because they already have a workflow and project system in place in-house that they want to use. And I'm on site frequently, so it's not like things are exchanged over phone or email, you know, requests and things. It's becoming, you know, it's quite the challenge. And even though I've done it for years, it's still hard because they're set in their own ways and all those kinds of stuff. So it's a real balancing act, and it's sometimes you just have to be a little more upfront than you're comfortable with.
Yeah. And you know, it can be awkward, but there's nothing wrong with saying you have to set your expectations, right? And they'll do the same with you. So you know, it is a bit awkward. I mean, in most engagement calls I do, it's, you know, there's always that few sentences. Now, you know, of course, this much has to be paid, and if it's not paid, work stops and you waive all liability to lateness and shipment. Of course, it's very awkward to tell someone that.
Right, especially when you're feeling good and everybody's pretending like they're your best friends. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have to tell them, but these are all the things I think you're going to screw up.
Right.
And this is why you're going to sign this paper that says I'm not liable.
Kind of like a prenup.
It is a lot like a prenup. It is exactly like that. I think we're going to be great together. But if you turn out to be horrible, just put your John Kent Hancock over here. We'll be fine.
But I've had a few 20 or 30 divorces, so I need you to sign this.
Yeah. But all right, let's move on from that. All right. We're going to take this down a dark side.
Good, because I have an urge to talk about GUI toolkits.
Yes, Hans from Germany. Actually, I love German beer, Hans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you want to break a number of federal laws in the United States, send me a case.
And me? Come on.
No, Chris lives in Washington. The Mounties will get him. He's close enough to Canada.
Oh,
the Mounties are very, very tough.
I do frequently have to watch out for the Mounties.
Yes, but send it to me. You know, a nice, is it the Miser Ale, the dark red ale?
Mm.
Okay, we're way off topic here. Sorry.
All of a sudden this winter beer is tasting. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Sam Adams Winter Ale, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so Hans is working in Ogre 3D. It's a C++-based graphics engine. Now, I looked at it a number of years ago, and I'm a shocked it's still around, given. So I looked at it in terms of using it for games, and I'm just surprised. Sorry, what's the name of the engine? Unity and oh, any of the other 30 game engines that have come up in the last 2 years haven't really killed this.
Oh, well, is it because it's free?
It's free. It's actually not that bad. I played with it. I've never used it for a real project. So his question is actually, do I know of any free GUI toolkits? Because he's a student and they're shipping a project.
Ah.
I have no idea. If you're really invested in this engine, I don't know what to tell you. If somebody in the chat or in the listening crowd knows, just email the show and I will pass the message along.
It has Xcode 4 templates. That's interesting. And it
Yeah,
also.
it's been around. It supports a lot of different tool sets and environments.
Yeah, it looks like it also has some. It can do some interaction with Blender and Maya, which is really cool.
Yeah, if I don't know what the tooling is around this for I'm assuming you mean like GUI libraries, like UIKit or something like that.
You know, I covered on the Linux Action Show this week. Unity 4 or the Unity 3 engine release 4 has added Linux publishing, and it's pretty slick. I don't know if you ha caught that portion of the Linux Action Show, but
Yeah, I did hear that. Yeah, it's now my understanding, because when they first added Mac, you had to be in Windows to do it. It was kind of weird.
yeah,
Yeah.
I think that's how it is with this too.
Okay.
But the guy, you know, just I mean, he take it took it took like 15 seconds to export the Linux version. Very cool. I mean,
Well,
and
yeah, because all your script is done in either their weird what is it, BootScript, JavaScript, or C Sharp, and that just translates down into the engine. So yeah,
it's pretty neat. And Unity is impressing me, I gotta say.
Unity is a tool I've used. I like it. I'm a
Oh
little
boy.
concerned. I'm
Oh.
a what?
Well, that doesn't sound like you like it at all when you say it like
Well, I'm
that.
a little concerned that it's becoming the only game in town.
Oh, well, yeah, it does seem like that's happened a
I'm
little bit.
seeing a lot of sloppy hacks to make it a 2D game engine, which it's not.
That sounds kind of cool, actually.
Well, when it works well. When it doesn't work, it's very obvious that they tried to force it to be 2D.
Well,
Yeah, anyway, moving along.
yeah.
So, Chris, you and I have a confession to make.
Oh, okay, I'm ready.
Bless me, Larry, for I have sinned. Me and Chris both have spoken ill and blasphemed against Android.
Oh yeah, boy. You and I both were having we both took to Google Plus this week, didn't we?
Yes.
And separately, we hadn't really discussed it ahead of time, started bemoaning about our various Android device failures.
Yeah, so yours is something I think I had actually experienced, and it ended up breaking my Nexus 7 that I had to get replaced.
I had my Nexus 7 and I was using it quite a bit, and I went to bed and the battery died overnight. And after I plugged it in, it would power up immediately, and then the Android would start, it would shut off, and then I would get this weird snow effect on the screen. It would power down for about 30 seconds to a minute, and then it would start up and do the same process over and over again, and it was doing it for like 20, 30 minutes. And then I
Oh,
started to get worried about what the hell was going on.
that's exactly what mine did. Go return it. I'm just looking at your video now. That is exactly what mine did, and then it wouldn't turn on after a few days.
So here's what I did, and now it's not doing it anymore. And I'm wondering, see, I think this is a, I don't think it's a, dev, I don't think it's a hardware failure. I think it is a software failure. I think what happens is Android has hard rules about shutting down when the battery's at 0%. And so it comes up, womp womp, battery at 0%, I'll start a shutdown. Something in the stack crashes big time, and the operating system doesn't complete the power off. Well, the power on and off state is soft. It's not set by the power button. So it's set to on because it never finishes the shutdown. So then it starts back up again, and it just repeats and repeats and repeats. So what I eventually did to break the cycle was I got into the bootloader, and then from the bootloader, if you toggle through the options in the bootloader, there's a power off option. And then when I hit that, it stayed off. And I let it sit there for a few hours, and then I came back later and powered it on, and it was like at 80% battery, and it's been fine since then.
Okay, so for Joe User, it's a brick,
Yeah.
is what you're saying.
Well, I showed
Yeah.
it to my wife, and that's what my wife said is, oh, well, you have to return that now. You have to get rid of that. And I'm like, well, I think there might be a way around it, but if I was even like my dad, who's fairly technical, you know, but not as savvy, I think he would consider it a lost cause at that point.
I did. I had the same. I didn't even think to do the BIOS. I was like, all right, I just bought this. This is broken. Give me a new one. That is exactly what I did.
And I'm not hating on Android, but that seems like, and then the other thing is other people in the Google Plus thread, some said they've never seen that before, and then some said, yeah, I've gotten that too.
Well, I can say on the new one they sent me, I have not seen it.
It
So
seems like
that's why
it seems like a software crash. And yeah, I'm running 4.2 on it, so I've got the latest Android.
and to be fair, it happened to me on whatever, I got it right when it launched.
Oh, so to get into the bootloader, answer infinite K. Oh, really? Jeez, it must have shipped dead.
Yeah.
To get into the bootloader, you hold down the power button and the volume down button when it's off, and hold it down until it boots up, and it goes into the bootloader.
That's kind of awesome.
Oh my gosh, though, I was really worried because I really been enjoying the Nexus 7, and then to have that, it was a little disappointing. And I also have to say, I've had some issues with 4.2 in general. I feel like performance is not as good.
All right. So my adventures with the Nexus. So for the last few weeks, my Galaxy Nexus has. I just, what was it, 2 weeks ago? I got the 4.2 V2, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And my scrolling has gone to garbage in terms of performance. It has a hard time switching between screens now. It looks like it's struggling.
Wow. Yeah, I got stuttering when I bring up the application switcher now.
All of that is acceptable. I mean, not acceptable, but I can live with it. But I am one of those rare retro people who uses my smartphone as a telephone. I was on a call about 3 days ago, sorry, right before the holiday, so it must have been Wednesday, with a prospective client discussing developing an Android app on my Galaxy Nexus. Mid-call, it restarts. Guy thinks I hung up on my phone, that just told him to drop the signal. And that something's wrong with my phone. I'm sorry, I'm getting it fixed. So I then did a little bit of Indiana Jones Googling around trying to figure out, all right, what's going on. So I've come up with two reactions from people. Yeah, it happens to me. You're SOL. You're CyanogenMod. Go back to 4.1. Just not a solution. Oh, you're just, and the second reaction seems more common on Google Plus or places where it has been named. Oh, you're just hating on it because it's Android.
Right. Well, and you got to figure Google Plus is very pro Google products.
So, A, I'm not hating on it. I use it as my phone, and it legitimately isn't working. Right? It is a phone that's failing to handle phone calls.
Right. And you haven't replaced the ROM. It's not like it's all stock, right? It's just the
No, so
stock.
I never root or. I not in years. This phone has never been rooted. Nothing. It's the way it comes. So I'm sure Google's going to fix it, right? The problem is if that's a fundamental flaw, like that needs to be fixed now. And my concern is that they're going to roll it into just a bigger patch, and it'll come out, mid-December or,
The phone
January.
actually powered off on you?
So it hits a it restarts. It powers off, it turns itself
Oh,
back
like
on.
a crash.
Yeah, it's a hard crash.
Yeah, that's difficult. I've had that with my older Android phones. Now, the Nexus hasn't exhibited any of those kinds of things, but I don't use it as a phone. So,
Right. Well, and that's what I had from a lot of people. Well, I mean, my phone never crashes, but I don't make phone calls. Well, I bought it as a phone.
Now, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna hang with it, or are you gonna get a different phone?
Well, the nice thing is I have like 300 phones lying on my desk for testing purposes, so I can, and they're all CDMA, so I can go ahead and activate any of them. The issue is they're not 4G, and I've been told by my friendly Verizon rep that it doesn't. I'd have to go in and potentially buy another phone.
If you want 4G.
No. Apparently, 4G on Verizon uses SIM cards, kind of like what AT&T
Oh,
does.
yeah. Oh, I see.
So
So
they're trying to talk. So of course he switches into a sales pitch and wants to sell me an iPhone 5, figuring I'm pissed off at Android. All right, I'll buy an iPhone,
right.
which is actually a very smart tactic, right?
That is good. Yeah, clever.
And to be honest, I am, if it doesn't resolve itself at the end of this week, I'm going to have to switch to a different phone.
Windows Phone 8.
Are they available on Verizon? I don't.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the
Are
other
they
thing is it
shipping?
has to
Are they
be.
shipping? I don't know.
Right. I'm paying for LTE. I'm on Verizon, so it has to be CDMA LTE.
Okay.
So I can't. I wish I could just buy a Nexus 4, and that would be problem
You know,
solved.
there's supposedly an LTE chip in that thing. I don't know what frequencies, but I was looking at the teardown and I fix it and they pull it open and there's an LTE antenna in there and chip.
Is it really?
Yeah. I'm sure you'll have to use some sort of alternative ROM or something to get it activated, which isn't really up your alley. But it's interesting that it does look like I don't know where I'm this is in my memory somewhere, but I remember reading it was like Canada frequencies or something, which I guess they're on different channels than we use here in the States.
So it gets better though. So it's even purchase. So if I was willing to purchase the iPhone 5 full retail at say 650, 700 after tax, they would change my plan for activating a different phone.
Hate that.
Yeah, so that's why I'm holding off, because I mean I'm getting killed coming and going here. Like, and they won't give me an early activation. So whatever I do is going to be full retail.
So really just be best if you could hang tight with your current setup.
Right, but I can't do it forever, right? I can't have it. I mean, a week is okay, you know, I can push things onto Skype instead of the phone.
So
Yeah.
what is where does this lead? I mean, I don't know. I guess I'd like to hear. I've heard a few comments. People say that 4.2 has added issues for them. I'm wondering if maybe other folks out there have had issues. Although Bear 454 in the chat room says he hasn't had any fidgetiness with phone calls on his Galaxy Nexus running 4.2, so it could be a hardware problem.
That's great. And when I take it to the Ryzen store, like, it'd be nice if they could tell me that.
Yeah.
Like,
You know, I'll be honest. It is. You know, with Angela had an iPhone 4S
right.
and the speakers quit working for like music and stuff, but like the
My
Ring still worked.
4S is like that, but the Ring doesn't even work. Yeah.
Oh, well, she just took it in there even after a year after it was under, you know, the warranty had expired,
Right.
and she took it in there and they swapped it. They're just like, okay, well, here you go, here's a new one, brand new one. I mean, like maybe refurbished or whatever, but like, you know, look brand new.
Really? Maybe I'll go to the Apple store and see if they'll do that for
And I'm
me.
just sitting there going, holy crap, really? I mean, like the iPhone 5's already out. You know, they could have said, well, no, sorry, but we'll give you a discounted upgrade or something like that. No, they're just like, okay, no problem, here you go. Yeah, okay, we've seen this happen sometimes. And I'm just like, geez, that was really smooth. I mean, you got to give it to him for that.
Maybe I'll do that, because then if the Ringer works on the 4S I have here, I could just activate that, I think, right?
As long as
Maybe
you have
I.
as long as it's, you know, yeah, if it's CDMA or whatever.
Yeah, it is. All right. Maybe I'll do that.
See.
Off to the Apple Store. Hope
Well,
they don't remember me.
now, what do you think? Do you think we're going to get it to C++?
Do some C++.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So we have the backstory. So C++ was created in 1979 by Bashar. Oh my God, I can't say his name. Last name is
Straustrup?
Strop. He's a PhD kind of guy. Blah, blah, blah. You can read Wikipedia if you're really interested. So here's what's up. C++ was huge, right? It was a very big language, had a lot of market share. If any of you were around when Java first came up, Java had the challenge of pulling people away from C++. Which is nice. Now, what happened is that a lot of managed language, so that includes Java, C Sharp, all that kind of stuff. I mean, we could go down a list of managed languages, but really the big two are Java and C Sharp. Started gaining popularity in application development and even website server development, so system development. C++, I would say mid late 90s, really fell out of favor, with Java and C Sharp gaining a pretty serious, you know, they're dominant right now, right? If you look at the numbers, I think Java is still the most commonly used language, and C Sharp is right behind it.
Yeah, I was actually just I'm Googling around, and one I don't know about. Now this is interesting. Is I was looking at what people sell books on, what the no number one books that sell are in programming, and Java.
Java.
Yeah, it's way up there. Although C++ is rocking a pretty good second place, but
Well,
Java's got it way beat.
so that's what we're going to talk about today, right? C++ is making a little bit of a comeback, but I think we should backpedal just a little.
Okay.
So in the episode 20,000 Leagues Under Java, we talked about the difference between a high and quote low level language. If you don't understand what we're talking about, I recommend you go back and listen to that show or do some Googling. But just for a quick errata, so when we say managed, we're talking about memory managed, meaning you don't have to deal with your memory yourself. There's some kind of garbage collector doing it for you. So in Java, obviously there's a garbage collector. Same deal in C#. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. I'm following.
So C++, see, the thing is, the way this story is being pitched is that C++ died and is now being resurrected, you know, Phoenix style.
Yeah.
That's not true, right? It never died. There are a lot of areas where it was still alive, particularly anybody who wants an Xbox, a PS3, maybe a Wii U, but I hear it performs like it was written in Java. Sorry.
Oh. Wow, look, you're trolling like several groups at once with that one.
Yes.
That's nice. Gamers and Java developers, they never get upset.
Wait, people write games in Java?
Hello.
Really?
Well, have you? Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
Well, no, you wouldn't.
No, I'm sure I wouldn't. No, but in all seriousness, so C++ is alive and well in the game development arena. Basically, if you go for a job in the gaming industry and you don't know even a little C, even if you're going to do scripting, right? So if they're using an engine, let's talk about Unity since everybody loves Unity. And you say, okay, I know C#. I know how to script, I can script the logic. I can script a little bit of fake AI logic. I'm good to go. They're going to say, lovely. Now, you do know some C++, right? It is. Did you like that, lovely? That has you laughing.
Mm-hmm.
You pretty much need it in that area. Someone in the chat's mentioning the performance in scientific areas. That's probably true. I do hear a lot of people using Python in that area as well. Should also mention that, did we talk about this in a previous episode? You can write a C++ extension for Ruby or Python.
Oh, I don't think so.
Consume it? Okay, well, you can. A C or C++.
Okay.
So if you have a particular function that needs to be a little more performant, you can go ahead and do that. Additionally, you know, so, all right, let's, because I think this is the arena people are going to be interested in, games.
Yeah.
Because it's unlikely you're writing your CRUD app in C++, because that's not necessary. At the bottom, you have your engine, right, that talks to the OS layer. That is in C++. On top of that, you'll have something like Lua or C#, or Objective-C even, although sometimes the engine's in Objective-C.
Mm.
I've seen one engine in Python, but it's a little weird.
Mm.
And that does your scripting logic, and then the engine actually does all the performance stuff. That's a very high-level, very simplified overview, but that's basically where it's used in games. The idea is that, all right, let's look at Call of Duty, right? Most of the Call of Duty games are written with the same engine.
Right.
So they wrote that C++ code once. Or even better example, everybody's heard of the Unreal Engine. So you have that code, and then you write your logic in something else, usually Lua or sometimes C#.
Or like Valve Source Engine, which is probably...
Exactly. Valve Source Engine is a great example as well.
Yeah.
That's not to say you couldn't write your logic in C++. A lot of it varies engine to engine.
Doesn't that kind of inherently bring somewhat some more portability, because if it's abstracted like that, then you can write the top layer for whatever OS it needs to run on. Like, I'm thinking Android versus, like, you know, writing, like, when people write Angry Birds or whatever it is for one platform, they don't write the entire thing top to bottom for each platform, right? Generally, they have
generally
the back end that is maybe in C++, and then they'll have the front end for whatever's best for that platform.
So what you do is you have a very abstract interface to your scripting code, and the engine itself handles the implementation detail per operating system. Now, you can get into issues of a leaky abstraction where you might need slightly different... It gets messy, right? Like any other big abstraction, these engines often need some tender love and care per platform. Great example. Ever buy an Xbox game and then buy the same game on the PS3 and notice the PS3 version's horribly broken? A la Skyrim? That tends to be why. Because these engines tend to be written for Windows PCs, which is super close to the Xbox, right? And then Sony decided to be different, and I have a feeling the PS4 is going to be the same as the Xbox with some black paint.
Oh.
It is just, and that's off in the weeds, but the architecture, the cell architecture they chose was just unwise. It was just not the right decision.
Is your sound cool, though?
Well, theoretically, it's better. The problem is, you know, in that industry, everybody's doing the lowest common denominator. So they would optimize for PC and Xbox.
Right.
And
because PS3. Cost of development is a huge factor for those shops.
a game costs more than a film now. Millions of dollars went into, I know, Call of Duty Black Ops. It's on par with AAA films.
Well, and it's making more.
Oh yeah, I think it didn't. Isn't it the highest grossing entertainment product of ever?
It's I know it just had some sort of record. Halo 4 just had some sort of box office blowout. Like it just crushed movies. I can't remember the numbers, but it's really crossed that point.
Call of Duty beat Halo, but it's kind of not a fair comparison. Call of Duty's cross platform. But anyway, back to the point.
Yes.
So this is serious stuff. If you're running a lot of C++, you're doing serious work. You may also be doing systems programming. Contrary to what Linus would have you believe, you could write an operating system in C++ and not C. He might hate you, but you could do it. So this is kind of the level you're at. Question is, why are people talking about this now? Well, there's, of course, the Apple Android side of things, right? Android has the native developer kit, which is sort of kind of pretty much geared towards game developers, which can consume C++ rather than Java because Google's not silly. Larry Page is calling to punch me in the throat.
About Android again? You're just such a hater.
They just let me out of the storage container on the docks. I really got to get my app together.
Speaking of app, you didn't plug your app. Did you want to do that? Your flow, but okay.
Oh, we will. Don't worry.
All right.
So the native developer kit can consume C and C++ rather than Java. Better performance. Java people, please email Alan at jupiterbroadcasting.com. Then, additionally, iOS and Mac also natively support C++. Fair play. So the idea is that you could have a big portion of your code cross-platform. Yay, you save money. That's normal. That's normally how C++ is used. Microsoft is being a little weird. They are actually, and I know this after watching hours and hours and hours of their Channel 9 videos, they're encouraging your business apps, so your CRUD apps, your code journals of the world, to be written in C++ rather than C#. And if you write them in JavaScript or TypeScript especially, there is a special place in hell for you.
Now, is that because they are moving away from C# in some way?
No, I don't think they're doing that.
No.
So Microsoft's a weird company, right?
Yes.
They've had these two, and we talked about before, they have these two for their development stack, these warring factions. The .NET folks with C#, which I know I've said this before, I think C# is probably one of the best languages on the market. And the C++ guys who, they have Office and they're clinging to their old implementation. And it's just, I get it. The C++ 11 standard is a lot better. It takes away a lot of the pain, right? You can write code that hopefully developer A and developer B code doesn't look radically different, because that used to be a issue with C++. But it still feels, and what's even weirder is on .NET, you can write C++ onto the CLR and have it use the garbage collector, which I don't understand. So if someone can tell me why you'd want to do that, because it seems like you'd be giving up the advantage of using C++.
Hmm.
Nevertheless, it's still, they're pushing that. And I think more importantly, they're also pushing DirectX over XNA. And I think this is kind of an offshoot of that. Because again, C++, unless you're using the open source Mono game, which uses the open source Sharp X, you are probably using Direct2D or DirectX, which is only consumed by C++ without some sort of bridge. Breathe, Chris.
I got it. I'm following.
So let's talk about CodeJournal.
All right. I like CodeJournal. I like that a lot.
We'll take a break.
What's CodeJournal written in? Is it written in C++?
It's written in Objective-C, which
How
is a
did
better...
I guess?
So Objective-C is a lot better than C++ in almost every way.
Ooh.
I'm actually dead serious. I like it a lot better.
I know you're serious. That's pretty strong. It's a pretty strong statement. But
the history of the languages is very interesting. They were kind of like, at one time, competing with each other, and C++ won. Right? So Objective-C doesn't exist outside of Apple. But if you were writing some C++ code, and you were interacting with your fellow developers on GitHub, yelling at them for their atrocious code style in C++, because they probably all have their own style, you would use CodeJournal to do that.
That's what I would use.
And if you're on your iPhone,
what?
If you hate freedom as much as I do.
But you have an Android device.
Which I hate.
Oh, okay, okay.
Didn't you listen to the feedback?
That's right, I remember now.
You can get your GitHub feed via the iPhone. Now, if you download the current version, you'll notice it allows you to create gist and it's kind of broken. That was not supposed to be available currently. That was what we call a mistake. That is supposed to be an in-app purchase. So, enjoy it while it lasts. And it doesn't really work because it's not turned on yet.
And you're just kind of waiting for...
Well, iTunes Connect has been down and I've been unable to push the update.
Yeah.
But, so, thank you for the bug report. It is a bug, but it's a much different bug than you guys think it is. I got the report. The keyboard's stuck. No, it's not supposed to let you do it at all.
Where would I get CodeJournal? I mean, I just feel like I need it right now. Where would
The Mac one, I suggest you go to CodeJournalApp.com, okay. Unless you enjoy waiting 30 to 40 days for updates.
Because then if you did, you could get it from the App Store.
Right, you could, but
what do you see more sales? Have you seen more App Store sales, or are you seeing more direct?
It ebbs and flows. Mm. One thing is, like, I had one guy tell me he didn't like the size of the guy who told me he didn't like the non-skeuomorphic did, in fact, one-star it. So that did hurt App Store sales a bit.
That's so awful that just does that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and it's same with they must use the same ranking system with the podcast. Because if we had 100 people listening to the show, go give us 5-star ratings in iTunes, we'd shoot way up in the tech charts for the day. It'd be great.
Well, so to be fair, most apps should legitimately be 3 stars, right? 3 to 4 stars.
Nothing's perfect.
Nothing's, and 3 is decent, right?
Yeah.
You know, you also have to remember you're only paying a few dollars for what years ago would have been a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
The App Store, and let's not get off on that, but if you want the iPhone one, you have to go to the App Store, obviously.
Yeah. That's cool you put on the iPhone. That's really really handy.
Yeah, it's a very 1.0. The in-app purchases weren't approved, and then they took down the store, so we had to go without it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's good for glancing at what you're doing, and frankly, I found it helpful because sometimes I'm traveling or I'm away from my desk, and I don't want to, you know, sit down, take out my laptop, tether my phone.
Right.
Just want to whip out my iPhone and be like, okay, so this guy's trying to do a pull request. Denied.
Right. Next. Right. Exactly. Well, you know, now let me ask you something, Mr. Dominic. You ever shop at the Amazon.com?
I always do.
Well, then here, I suggest you do something. Before you go to Amazon.com or Newegg or ThinkGeek or Best Buy or even eBay, stop by JupiterBroadcasting.com and click our affiliate links down there for those sites. That way we get a little portion of your shopping session. We just carve a little bit off the top. We just kind of like the mafia. We're just taking a little bit off the top, and you don't even have to think about it. It just gets contributed to us, helps us keep these shows on the air. We've got some browser extensions down there you can load to automatically take care of that for you, too. Of course, you can also do direct donations over at jupiterbroadcasting.com/donate. But, you know, if you want to get yourself some shopping done for the holiday season and you want to help us out, you can use those affiliate links before you shop, and we really appreciate that. How do you like that, huh?
I did not know of your organized crime affiliation.
Well, I'm just kind of making a comparison, you know, just to kind of let people know, you know, just taking a little off the top. That's all. Just part of the system.
Interesting business. No. Moving right along from that.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, so why would you use C++ now?
Right.
Performance, performance, performance. Now, there's another player who I would say is not huge right now. I've made a prediction that 2014 Qt will be a household name.
Hmm.
And I'm thinking on the Linux side, that is where you'll be using your C++.
Ah, yes, you know, that makes some sense.
Because they're going to have their equivalent of, what is it called? Zemirian, MonoTouch, the abstraction layer for mobile development.
Yeah.
So think about having one set of business logic for desktop, mobile, you know, and potentially all the desktops, right?
Hmm. Hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, in fact, I'm just looking over, there's already several books on C++ GUI programming with Qt4.
I would hold off because when Qt5 comes out, I have a feeling those are going to be very, very deprecated.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, this looks like it's already something that has a little momentum behind it. I'm reading on the Qt Projects website. Yeah, this is something they're pushing. So I could see this totally. This would make a lot of sense, especially for the Linux platform.
Now, you know, let's be real here. C++, if you're coming from a Java or C# background, can be a bit painful, right? It's a lot like when Java developers go to Objective-C and immediately want to throw themselves off the Brooklyn Bridge. Luckily for you guys, the tooling doesn't suck. You have Visual Studio, which, regardless of your feelings, is the best editor currently out there. The best, if you like heavy IDEs, it's the best one.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Qt's not bad. Eclipse sucks.
Oh, man.
I'm just trolling. You could use Eclipse for C++, but it is not really geared towards it. It's doable, and it works, right? But it's not optimal.
Hmm.
Additionally, I've used in the past something, an open source editor called CodeBlocks, which is okay.
Okay.
My C++ tends to be written in Xcode, because it has to, or oftentimes Sublime Text 2 or Vim.
There you go.
I don't know, just the efficiency you get once you know one of those editors, such as Vim, it's really hard to beat with any of the other tools.
Yeah, like little shortcuts and like sort of, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially like pasting code snippets.
Mm-hmm. And it's always on like every box except for Windows, but it's easy to get on Windows too.
Yeah, and you can download actually Sublime Text has a Vim mode, which is awesome.
Oh, I should check that out.
Yes,
I didn't know that.
It's kind of the best of both worlds.
The Vim keyboard commands and stuff.
Most of them work.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Yeah, I need to play more with all that stuff on Sublime Text, because I also know that there's a way, I got it working once, but I know there's a way to make Sublime Text open up files off SFTP servers, too.
There is, and you can also have Sublime Text compile your code. Ooh. And compile your whole project. Ooh. As though an IDE, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Jesus, fancy.
Yes.
We should make that. Have we ever made that our pick before?
I think we did.
We must have, like, probably early on.
Yeah, because I was like, Sublime Text rocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Chris, I'm a little bored of talking about C++.
I understand. You know what you need is some people asking for specific use case scenarios.
Yes.
In a way. Because I think, you know, you touched on gaming, which seems like a pretty obvious one for me. I think Linux desktop development is interesting. Python's obviously dominant there for a lot of desktop applications. But you combine it with something like a tool set like Qt Creator and C++, and then you get mobile portability, you get Linux desktop portability. Definitely, I could see a future strength there. I was just looking online. It definitely seems like people are talking about it more and more. But in terms of active development, I actually see a lot of stories that say there's now more Objective-C development than C++.
Yeah, so that's probably true.
Just, do you think, because of the app market size, the volume of, that's really where it's restricted to, right?
Yeah, and I also think that Objective-C embraces maybe not pure object orientation. So one thing is Objective-C is 100% pure superset of C. For C++, not really.
Hmm.
You know, especially if you get out of the standard compliant version, you go into MS C++ and things like that. It's strange. Like, I prefer Objective-C and I'm very biased. In a lot of ways, I feel like Objective-C gives you a much simpler way of doing things, but it's flexible that it lets you bend things to be powerful.
Hmm.
C++ gives you all the rope you could possibly want. And a lot of people do hang themselves.
I want to know what people out there think about it. I guess have you guys, we want you guys to email since coderradio@jupiterbroadcasting.com. I think, you know, we probably won't get a lot of people that are agreeing with you on Objective-C just based on our audience crowd, but you never know.
Shocking.
But I would love also to know, if there's been projects out there people have been involved in where C++ didn't work out, but also, you know, the projects or whatever you've been working on where you've decided, no, we have to go C++, why? What was it that, was it performance? Was it a game? I'd love to hear some non-gaming examples too, just to kind of get some ideas of those.
I'm having a hard time justifying it you know, for anything that's not a game or that's not some sort of system level project, or that's not somehow intensive, like some kind of natural language processing or something like that.
So what was the you were kind of touching on it, the Channel 9 guys, they were saying, the Microsoft Channel 9 guys, they were saying, you know, desktop apps should be C++.
But they're pushing to the choir. I mean, they're preaching to the choir, right? But
what's their reason?
Their pitch is, you've been writing C++ for 10 years. You don't want to learn anything else. Go ahead and write C++.
Windows is the premier C++ platform.
Basically, if you're a C++ developer, Windows is... Yeah, they're saying that Visual Studio and Windows are the best environment for you to work
in. I mean, Visual Studio... I mean, every developer I've ever worked with who really knows their stuff has always said, Visual Studio is amazing. And I've never used it myself. I mean, I've opened it up, I've launched it, looked at it, but I've never done anything serious in there.
Because Microsoft is actually... I mean, if you think about it, they're one of the only companies who actually profits in a significant way off their development community. So they have a big incentive to make that.
They got the MSDN subscription. You sell some of the tools. Yeah. Yeah, it is. They do charge actually more than Apple does for a lot of stuff. But a lot of people bust Apple for the $100 a year thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess part of my issue is what they're pushing on Channel 9 is a lot of it has the hint of, you know, you've been doing this for 20 years. You don't need to learn anything new. And and I don't mean to hit that too hard, because Chris, we actually do have a lot of more, say, senior listeners.
Experienced.
Yeah. Especially.
Morgos in the chat room says, I've been working for years in research in robotics, computer vision. Yeah. When you care about performance and not really care about GUIs, C and C++ is just a no-brainer.
So I totally agree with that. My problem is, when you're developing a GUI CRUD app, it's a little weird to go all the way down to C++ to me.
Like, it's excessive?
It's excessive. And I'm, you know, I always think about, okay, if I need to get help on this project, how much is it going to cost me?
Mm.
And C++ is going to cost me a bit more than, say, Java or C#.
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues, right? There's also the idea that C++ is, you know, my C++ and your C++ may not necessarily be compatible. Yeah. Especially if you're doing a lot of the Microsoft or, I mean, they're the ones who do it. They have their own compiler. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of their specific compiler flags and things like that that'll screw up your code.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, they have embraced the C++ 11 standard. And it seems like they're going in a more friendly direction. Okay, I mean, the bottom line is, if someone emailed in saying, I'm writing this app, it, you know, hits a RESTful service, it gets some data, displays it on the screen, the user can interact with that data. I don't know that I could legitimately suggest that they do it in C++. Now, if somebody came and said, I'm writing a game and we'd like to write our own engine, yeah, go ahead, C++, do it.
Right, sure.
I mean, unless you're targeting Apple exclusively, then maybe you'll look at Objective-C, but...
What about something like the Canonical Ubuntu Software Center that is just so painfully slow? And I would just like if I'm going to spend money on your store, I want every single tweak you can do to make performances absolutely as fast as possible. Is C++, does that fit there?
Not really.
Because it's so GUI heavy?
Well, so that's the extreme case. Odds are that that's written in something even slower than C# or Java. It's probably written in Python or, God forbid, HTML.
It's probably a Python frame around an HTML.
Right. Page is what it looks like.
Yeah.
So they're on the way other spectrum of performance.
It's so awful. It's so slow.
And the other thing is, as Grey Wolf is correctly pointing in the chat, just writing your app in C++ doesn't make it fast. Like, maybe I didn't hit this point hard enough. It really does give you all the rope to hang yourself. You can also... So a mediocre developer developing in C++ versus developing in Java will be better off in Java, because the garbage collector and the JVM will optimize it for you. Or in C++, if you don't do it, your app's going to A, be very crashy because memory management, B, very slow because you won't properly optimize things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some tools like C++ Boost to help you out, But again, these tools can easily become a crutch and get you into, say, poor practices. I mean, go Google around C++ Boost and you'll see it's very popular. It's also very risky and very not popular. It's strange. It's one of those things people love to hate. And there are uses for it, but it's not great. So if you are not a seasoned developer in a language that's memory managed, lower level, I would not think of shipping a commercial app in C++. Graybolt's asking when I say Boost is risky. I'm saying it's risky because it can become a crutch, right? So the abstraction Boost gives you hides a lot of these what you're doing from you.
That makes
right.
sense.
Because at that point, if you're putting in this big abstraction layer or you're putting in this big framework to help you, why didn't you just write it in something higher like C# and not worry about it? Because the CLR or the JVM is, I'm sorry, most developers, the JVM is a better at optimizing code than they are. Right? I'm sure it's better than I am. Except in Objective-C, because Objective-C is, of course, inherently better.
Oh, okay, right. Let me write that down.
Yeah, just write that one down for me. But let's, I would encourage you to look at it, but don't assume it's a golden ticket to high performance.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And don't think you can just, okay, I know some Java, I'm going to go learn to go do some C++.
I kind of agree with Mr. Disco, who has asked me not to call him Disco. Disco, formerly known as Disco, says that there's no good alternative for C++ in Linux land. .NET is not there, and Java and JVM sucks.
Mono is still better than... Okay, if you aren't at a level where you're comfortable working with C++ and you can write performant C++, you're probably better off with Mono.
There's this big political hurdle to that.
Well, we're not talking philosophy here. We're talking pure...
technical.
Yeah, pure. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, the worst project is a project you can't ship because you realize you bit off more than you can chew.
Yeah.
So I'm suggesting that if you're not comfortable with it, certainly don't try and do client work or employer work in C++ if you're not comfortable.
I got to look into Vala, too. He mentioned Vala. Something I think he says the elementary OS folks use.
Vala's pretty cool. Geary is actually written in Vala.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. That is cool. And Geary runs great.
Yeah, Geary, Vala is a lot like C#.
Well, we should talk about that more because that...
We should talk about that more.
Geary, you know, in terms of performance, handsomely outstrips Thunderbird in terms of dealing with my large inbox.
Actually, I have a patch because I'm a developer on the project that I forgot to push.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's been sitting on my hard drive for a month. Whoops.
I mentioned that I was using Thunderbird last night on Google+, just because I was testing something, and I think one of the Vala devs noticed, and he was really sad. One of the Geary devs. I'm still using Geary. I love
back
it.
Back to Geary.
I love it. No, I use Geary. I do. And out of my main system, I totally love Geary. So Vala has impressed me. Just seeing something there, it has piqued my interest, I guess I should say. Not impressed, but piqued my interest.
I like Vala. The problem is it doesn't have a lot of adoption.
Yeah, well.
One of the nice things is if you've been a developer for a while, you can probably pick up Vala and go. It took me maybe 2 weeks to read some docs and figure out what was going on.
Is it very heavy? Like if I distribute my application as a, you know, if I've written in Vala, is there a lot of dependencies that the user has to have on their system to run it? Like, I don't remember.
That's pretty relative. I don't compare it to, say, Mono, no.
Okay. Or Java, where you have to have the JVM.
I guess the answer is no.
Yeah.
You do. No, you don't, actually.
Well, that's very interesting.
Anybody interested in Vala, I'd recommend that, especially if you're doing Linux development, take a look. It's very interesting, and I like it, to be honest. I mean, it's very new. The tooling isn't quite there. I'm running Vala in Sublime Text.
Oh, okay.
But I'd probably do that anyway, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm looking it up right now, and looks like it's been around not that long. It started, and it looks like it showed up on the scene in 2008.
Right, which it's a baby, right?
C++ compared to C++, yeah.
1979, and Objective-C came around before that.
Right,
so
right.
It's a baby as far as languages go.
Yeah. But that's not necessarily a bad thing as long as it's functional. Huh.
Wait. Infinite Chaos has a program that has 2.5 gigs of memory usage. And it crashes.
That's not.
Well, the way to fix that code is to RM tack R it and start over.
Ouch.
Did you write all of that? Or did you inherit that?
That's,
Because
yeah.
if you're, no, it sounds like a big old memory leak, right?
Yeah.
If it's taking 2.5 gigs off, I'm assuming this is a desktop program, off a desktop, that's awful. Wow. What are you leaking like media stuff?
He says no.
It's a big memory leak too. Well, although I work on phones a lot, so to me,
Well, yeah.
I don't even have 2.5 gigs. I'm like,
Infinite needs to sum that up in an email and send that into us. That sounds like that'd be an interesting one to read.
If you own it and you have source code, I'd love to look at it. If you can't do that, I understand a client, whatever. But yeah, if you could send more information, that would be very interesting to look at.
Yeah.
Because 2.5 gigs is a lot. Now, is that 2.5 gigs after running for a long time, or is that relatively quick?
Called Firefox, and you just have two tabs open.
It's called Chrome, and
No.
that's why you don't have that problem.
Oh my gosh. Well, no, it's funny. Have you noticed in Chrome, like, tabs continue to use memory after they've long been closed?
Yeah, I don't know why it does that though.
Is that for the restore function or what? Like, right now, I have got like a dozen Chrome processes running, and I only have like three Chrome tabs open. What's
Yeah.
up? I don't know what's up. That's weird.
So it happens after about an hour to so about 45 minutes.
Well, Mr. Dominic, now before, because I know you have a meeting at the top of
The
the hour,
truth.
before you,
Good
we
call.
do we want to do the book pick before we run out of time?
We do. This book was sent in by someone named Matt. It's a classic, the C programming language.
It's funny because you can buy it new for $49.51 if you want it shipped, or you can get the Kindle version for $30. If you want to go crazy and get the hardcover new, $225. If you get it used, it's only $50. So don't get the hardcover, folks. Either
Get the
get the
Kindle.
paperback for $50 or get the Kindle for $30.
And that will. Oh, so Grey Wolf is actually answering your question.
Yeah, he is.
So it
It's the
runs
extensions.
extensions in
Yep.
its own. I did not know
I
that.
did know that. I just forgot, and I have too many extensions.
So that's probably what it is. I would go with the Kindle here because then you can search it.
Yeah, go with Kindle and Hollies if you can, as long as you don't mind the DRM. If you do, then get the paperback, I understand. But yeah.
Well, all right. Look at that. We're early.
Well, technically, actually, we've been recording for just over an hour because we started the show early to make up for the fact that you had to run. But this is honestly, it just gets kind of shows get kind of bunched up around the holidays because everybody has to fit extra stuff in. So it's that's just what happens on the holidays. Just what happens.
Yeah, and we have a very shy tease next week.
Totally.
If it all goes well, we have a very interesting Canadian, I know, interview next week.
Yeah, very. If the timing and schedules all work out, we should have a guest on the show next week.
That's right. Otherwise, I'm going to be discussing my favorite programming language.
Objective-C?
Possibly.
I wonder if we get enough feedback. Of course, remember, folks, anything we covered today, or if you think we missed something or you want to add to the conversation, just email us. CoderRadio@JupiterBroadcasting.com. You can join us live Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. Mr. Dominic, where can people follow you throughout the week?
They can find me on Twitter at Tumanuko, find me on Google Plus at Michael Dominic, and they can find me. That's about it.
You got your blog. Don't
I have a
forget
lot, true.
CodeJournalApp.com. And of course, we have links to all the ways you can get a hold of Michael in the show notes. Also, links to my social profiles and things like that. All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Coder Radio. We'll see you right back here next week.